Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country 2 minutes at a time for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
Second half of the program begins, as it always does on a Monday, with the 2 minute drill around the country, talking to the people, covering the stories, where they're happening, 2 minutes at a time, ish. Two-ish.
Or so.
Yeah. It's brought to you by our friends at Corona, Corona Light, Corona Premier, and the Corona Hard Seltzers. The end of the game required a number of Corona Premieres in my household. Get it right now. Get stocked up. If you're watching the Waste, the Corona Premier, lower calories, lower carbs, the Corona Hard Seltzer, zero carbs, zero sugars. What more could you ask for?
I can't think of anything.
No, that's it.
That covers it. That's
we've reached
all the, right there.
We've reached the end of the universe. There it is. We found it. It's the Corona Hard Seltzer.
There's a handrail.
Coming up a little bit later on, Trent Green will be with us talking Chiefs football. That's in the 5 o'clock hour. Take some more of your phone calls here after the two-minute drill. We begin that in Charlotte, North Carolina. And why wouldn't you when Travis Hancock is standing by, WFNZ, in Charlotte, North Carolina. Travis, how are you, sir?
Hey, good. How are you guys? Appreciate you guys bringing back on again.
I appreciate the time, man. Very much so. And let's start with the Clemson Tigers. DJ Uiagalelei. How'd I do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You did better than I do. I just call him DJU. So,
yeah.
I'm still not at the full name level yet here.
I have a phonetic spelling written out by Curtis in front of me, so I cheated my ass off on that. Full disclosure.
Here's the problem, though. If they ever pull him or he comes out of the game, the backup quarterback's last name is harder to say than his name. So be prepared for that.
Okay. I will be. I'll start practicing right now, or I'll get Curtis on a on a phonetic breakdown. Listen, are they – is this just finally the market correction year for them? They are really struggling on offense. I don't see it with DJ. I know he played really well against Notre Dame last year, but when I watch him – some of the reads he has, and frankly, the offensive scheme, if you go back to that Georgia game, a lot of standing around from the receivers. What's the problem? Is it coaching? Is it talent? Is it both?
I think it's a couple things. First of all, it's kind of crazy that here in the Dabo era, we now have Clemson with maybe their best defense ever in the Dabo era, at least maybe all time, and the offense under Dabo, the worst. Do they have the best defense going at the same time as their worst offense? Intriguing to see how that plays out. They've already got a loss. Usually when they lose, they can get back into postseason discussion, or they're already in it anyway because they just annihilate people. Well, if they play the other day, like against Georgia Tech, like they play in the ACC, they're not going to make it. They're not going to be impressive enough. That's how ugly it's been. It's horrid. And you mentioned DJU, and he's a problem, and the offensive line's a problem. They were 75th in rushing per game last year with Travis Etienne. Take him away, it's gotten worse. And when you look at their wide receivers, they're missing the Amari Rodgers type. They're missing Hunter Renfrow. They're missing those underneath guys, those speed guys. They're all big, tall, long wide receivers that take forever in their route, and it's hurting them. So, yeah, they're not built in the normal Clemson way this year. I think they're in trouble. I think they're going to lose a couple more games. You know, their defense is going to carry them, but this is interesting that a team that's kind of in the middle of a dynasty, so to speak, would have a drop-off like this on offense.
Yeah, North Carolina at 21. Virginia Tech falls out of the rankings. They would be at 28 if you tracked it on down. BC and Wake Forest getting some honorable mention votes here and there, a few handful, 9 and 7 for each of them. So they're still a ways out of crack in the top 25. And North Carolina's not on Clemson's schedule. So to your point, there's no, like, win with style opportunities here, and the conference championship.
One more note on Clemson. Yeah. Too. Sorry about that. One more note on Clemson. I want to get it in there. Keep in mind that during their heyday of Watson and early Lawrence and all these great players they had two offensive coordinators. They had Tony Elliott and Jeff Scott. Now, Tony Elliott's still there, and he's brought up for USC and NFL jobs. He's a highly thought-of guy, believe it or not, despite what you're saying. But they lost a guy named Jeff Scott, and he went to South Florida, which is a mess in itself. Part of me wonders if the drop-off, which started a little bit recently, you wonder if the drop-off started when Jeff Scott left and they're not adapted to losing the other coordinator. Just something to keep in mind there.
Okay, we'll keep an eye on that. Let's talk about the Carolina Panthers. They bounced back with a big win, 26-7, over the New Orleans Saints, a Saints team that looked like world beaters after they throttled the Green Bay Packers. What's the reaction now on Sam Darnold and Matt Rhule, as Rhule is in his second year? Darnold now two games into his Panthers career.
Wow, the fans are fired up here, and it's not just those two guys. I think there's a lot of Matt Rhule detractors here. A lot of it goes in because the fans here still blame him for Cam leaving, despite him really not having anything to do with it, and us trying to explain, like, Cam was gone regardless, and it didn't matter, but they still blame him, so no matter what he does, not all the people, but a lot of people blame him, but it's taken a while to, you know, people to sort of get a love for him, but it's starting now, and Sam Darnold, man, he looks so much more confident, so much more in control. It's amazing when you get away from Crazy Eyes Gase how much more comfortable you can look. He had a bad play yesterday, a terrible interception, but he hasn't made many bad plays. He looks the part, and I think you can win with Darnold because you have McCaffrey, you have the receivers in the Panthers' defense right now. I'm telling you, we said it all offseason. When the projections came out and the people had the Panthers in power rankings, 28, 29, we said, hold on a minute. That defense right there with all these young parts that flies around is going to be pretty good. And we thought, you know, they could be top 10 when the season ends. And having watched them play and the way they fly around, they are absolutely incredible right now. They might be a top 5 defense, that's all said and done, because they're still guys, they're all young. None of these guys are old, and they're still getting used to the NFL in a regular non-pandemic year, some of these guys. They held Jameis Winston yesterday. They pressured him the third highest rate in a game since 2009. For any team in any game, not just the Panthers. They pressured Jameis like 64% of his passes yesterday. They are playing at an insane level, and that can only help Sam Darnold get more accustomed to being away from the Jets here in Carolina.
Yep, it is good times right now. Is there any talk about Joe Brady going to USC?
Yeah, you know, his name comes up, but the defensive coordinator here actually has done a better job than Joe Brady, but the defensive coordinator, Phil Snow, is 66 years old. So he's not going to come up for a college job or a pro job. He's just going to kind of be here as long as Matt Rhule's here. Joe Brady, to me, he did a pretty good job yesterday, actually a really good job, especially in the first half. You know, he comes up for these NFL jobs in Southern Cal. I need to see more. He was a co-coordinator at LSU, where he basically called third down passing plays. He goes here, didn't have a great year last year, interviewed for all these jobs, and it's like, yeah, I understand he fits the thinking of what teams want and the McVay and the Kingsbury's and these offensive geniuses, and maybe eventually it'll get there, but I don't see it yet. It's starting to show a little bit more, but I just haven't seen enough where he's going to go, you know, what has he proven to take over USC yet?
Right.
That to me is one of, like, all right, there's other guys that have done more in this game so far. Eventually he may get there. I just don't see it, like, right now today.
Panthers 7.5-point favorites on Thursday Night Football at the Texans. We'll see if they can make it 3-0. And where is the level of excitement? Can the state of North Carolina contain itself waiting for two iconic programs to finally butt head? KU plus 16.5 at Duke on the gridiron, of course.
Yeah.
Level of excitement is where?
No, it's high. This is not quite the Champions Classic in November when they meet up once in a while, every couple of years. But no, it's you know, Duke actually played really well. They beat the heck out of Northwestern the other day. They actually had to hold on at the end. But Duke actually looked like they kind of did recently where they get the bowl game. But, yeah, I don't really think that I don't really think that's the hottest ticket in town right now. It's not like going to Cameron for this game. It's supposed to play
right
there.
Right. Maybe they should play the game in Cameron. It might be easier for the Jayhawks.
You know what? I may bring that up on the air tomorrow. It's not terrible. You know, these sports and these things, they play at crazy venues.
Sure.
They play Duke, Kansas, it's not Cameron. Yeah,
yeah, it'll be like the Winter Classic or something. It'll be a new iconic thing in college football. Yeah. Travis Hancock in Charlotte. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great week.
All right, man. Anytime. You too. Appreciate it.
Dan Schwartzman, D Sports Media in New York, New York. Dan, how are you, sir?
Great, Trent. How are you, buddy?
Better than Zach Wilson. Four INTs. Just a part of the learning curve or a reason for concern big picture-wise?
I don't think you could be concerned two games into a guy's tenure as a starting quarterback, especially when the guy across from him is one of the greatest, maybe the greatest head coach in the history of the NFL, and Bill Belichick, who, by the way, last year coached the Patriots a 45-0 win over Justin Herbert. So, and we know how good that rookie year was. So, look, a lot of people, of course, saying, oh, my goodness, maybe they drafted the wrong guy. Idiots. You cannot judge a quarterback based on two starts, especially when we know that Belichick has incredible success against rookie quarterbacks. So, look, it was ugly. It certainly was ugly. But every quarterback, if you look out there, has had ugly games. And certainly for Wilson, you hope that he learns from this when it moves on.
Hey, we had people in the media here in Kansas City calling Patrick Mahomes a bust before he ever stepped on a field. So, look, you know, it takes all kinds, I guess, to cover the NFL. By the way, Jets 11-point dogs at Denver. It doesn't get any easier for this kid because the Broncos have given up 13-13 in their first two games. A lot of defensive talent, so it's going to be a tough go for this Jets the next time around. Or no, do we like the idea that it's the Broncos? Granted, it hadn't been the biggest opponents so far for them, but do you think they have any kind of showing against the Broncos next Sunday?
You know, the key words you said were granted against the opponents, the Giants and the Jaguars, not exactly robust offenses there. But look, you know, the Jets deserve to be 11-point dogs right now in any game against anybody. They're one of the worst teams in the NFL based on how they've started the season. But, you know, it's a roster that was, you know, inherited by Joe Douglas. He's taken over the last 2 years. They have a lot of young players. Are they talented? Time's going to tell. But overall, there's not a lot of depth on this team. If you look at the drafting, I saw a statistic, which is ridiculous, that, you know, picks they've had between, like, 2015 and 2019, how many guys are still left on this roster? It's a ridiculously low number. So it's a team that's obviously still growing. They have a ton of draft picks next year. They have a lot of cap room as well. Anybody that thinks the Jets are going to somehow surprise this year, they're not. This is a long-term rebuild, and it's going to take a few years. And I think the hierarchy of this team understands that. The fans have to understand. And I think, look, it is what it is. They're just not a good team right now.
I would argue that you've got it wrong. The worst team in the NFL is the Atlanta Falcons, who have been outscored by 49 points, and yet the Giants only lay three. Granted, somebody's got to win here, 2-0-2, although I guess they could have a tie when it's all said and done. But anything to like about the way the Giants are going about their business? Any reason for optimism for the way they're playing?
You know what? I'll give you a name. Daniel Jones. To say, you know, I think it's fair to say that they haven't lost because of him, right? He plays fairly well. He's getting no help. The receivers are terrible right now. I mean, Kadarius Toney, he's a first-round pick. I don't see it, right? Saquon Barkley obviously is still working his way back from missing over a year of football. He looks like an ordinary back at this point. Defense hasn't exactly been stellar. The one guy that hasn't cost them anything is Daniel Jones. And by the way, Joe Judge has not gotten off to a good start. Some of the worst clock management I've seen in the last game, right? Having to blow a timeout down the stretch because his guys weren't ready to come out for, a field goal? I mean, come on. Awful coaching by him as well. So I think that's the positive, is the quarterback that everybody would say is much maligned has not been the reason for the losses.
Yeah, no, it's been a tough go, to say the least. The Yankees are just, what, 5-11 or so, something like that, in their last 16, and have now fallen down to fourth place in the AL East, which still puts them just a game and a half back of the wild card. I think we checked in about a week ago. Still no reason for optimism that this team's going to get it going, or did winning a couple of games against the Orioles inspire anyone?
You know, it's amazing. Every time we talk, it's a different situation, right? Last time we talked, I think they were coming off a big winning streak. And I was like, okay, it's the Yankees that should be where they are in terms of the talent level. Now they stink again. And the reason is no offense. Bullpen's been atrocious. no depth of the starting rotation. And Gerrit Cole's got to do a better job. You're making 30-some-odd million bucks a year. You got to stop the bleeding, especially when you're facing a lineup that's not very good in the Cleveland Indians. I mean, it's not a very good team. It's a 500 team at best. And I think everything's gone wrong. And, you know, as a Yankee fan, I'll tell you, there is some optimism in terms of them not making the playoffs. And I'll tell you what it is. Aaron Boone is not a good manager, all right? He is Brian Cashman's lackey. Brian Cashman's calling all the shots here. They have another guy who's their sabermetrics guy who's calling the shots. Boone apparently is making pitching moves before the game even starts and then sticks to a script. It hasn't worked. Cashman hasn't done squat. If you think about it, they've spent $2 billion in the last 10 years and they've won nothing. Let me tell you something really quickly, okay? Seren, if you look at Brian Cashman's long tenure as Yankees GM and you think about the players that they have drafted and internationally signed, take out Japanese players who were, you know, stars already when they came to New York, how many guys have really developed that they've developed? Aaron Judge, Brett Gardner, Severino's always hurt, Sanchez isn't very good, and Andujar's had 1 year. They haven't developed anybody, really, in the Brian Cashman era. Time for him to get out the door as well.
Great stuff. Dan Schwartzman in New York City. We appreciate the time, buddy. Have yourself a great weekend.
Chat soon, Seren.
To the arms of Florida.
Great weekend. How about that? Already leaning at the tape on a Monday. Zach Blobner, 620 WDAE in Tampa, Florida, is next. Zach, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Seren. How are y'all doing?
Not as good as Tom Brady. I mean, what the blank? I mean, 9 touchdowns in 2 games. I mean, stop. I mean, enough. Uncle. And then we got quotes of him talking about playing until he's 50. I mean, it's nauseating, for God's sake. As much as I know people must be sick of seeing Patrick Mahomes out there, because there's a lot of Patrick Mahomes out there, it's nauseating. Like, is it nauseating in Tampa? I bet not.
No, it hasn't gotten old yet. I don't know if it ever will. It certainly didn't seem to get old in New England for, what, 2 decades as he did it up there with the Patriots. You know, it's a lot, though, to take in. And I will say this. It never, like, stops surprising us. We never get to a point where we're like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, it still shocks us week in and week out, play by play. And you mentioned one of his quotes saying he'll play, or he could at least, until he's 50. How about after the game and then again today, kind of doubling down? He says that they left a bunch of points on the board yesterday, despite routing the Falcons. I mean, it just seems like the sky isn't the limit. The sky is the starting point week in and week out for Tom Brady.
Yeah, it is amazing. 2 touchdowns for Mike Evans. He's spreading the ball around. A touchdown for Chris Godwin. 2 more for Rob Gronkowski. 5 for Tom Brady. It is. And, of course, the defense playing well. Who stops him? Right? Like, who's scaring? I know the Panthers, God bless them, are 2-0, but I know that's not scaring the Bucs. Does anybody out there scare the Bucs right now?
Yeah, I mean, you got to think NFC, right? Because obviously you talk AFC, you're thinking Super Bowl. Personally, I think their biggest test is going to be this upcoming weekend at the Rams. You travel all the way to the West Coast. Matt Stafford seems to have that offense with McVay figured out quickly, maybe as quickly as some expected, but not others. But he looks good in it regardless. And we know that defense gave the Bucs a lot of trouble. Everybody in the league a lot of trouble last year. They seemed to pick up where they left off. They ramped. I think, me and I'm telling you the one I'm worried about or Irv can compete with the Bucs. It's long to find out quickly this thing how close.
And your phone's breaking up there a little bit on us there, Zach, but I got the gist of what it was you're saying. Let me switch gears and go to the Rays. Any chance that they get bored with the season since they're on cruise control in their own division? 6.5 games up on the Boston Red Sox, way up on the White Sox, pretty good lead on the Astros. Any chance they're a little bored going into the postseason this year?
I don't think so. Hopefully this is better. I switched off the AirPods. I was saying the Rams are definitely the biggest opponent for the Bucs, and they'll see them this weekend. But for the Rays, it's crazy because they look like they're slowing down, right? And you could say from the outside looking in, okay, well, maybe they're getting bored or maybe they're, you know, hitting a slump at the worst possible time. It really feels like they're setting all their computers on high alert, though, and they're just trying to figure out analytically what their best bets are pitching-wise heading into the postseason. They're getting guys extra rest. We've seen Wander Franco, who's been phenomenal this year since getting called up, get some rest. He's been, you know, quote-unquote, dealing with an injury. Sugar Shane McClanahan, the starter that's been the best this season, he's been resting up. So I think overall they're just using the gap between them and the rest of the AL East to get in as good of a spot as they can be before the postseason starts.
Yeah, and they're going to be, you know, their usual tough out for anybody that sees them. All kinds of pitching coming at you. We'll see what the Rays can do. If they can finally, you know, bring a championship to Tampa, long-suffering Tampa in the 10 minutes it's been since the last championship has been won by a Tampa franchise there. We'll see if that ends up happening. Florida Gators give Bama everything they want. 31-29. How much frustration is there over the fact that they're not able to get it tied up?
It's rough, you know, especially because they wouldn't have had to have had going for two if they got the extra point earlier in the game, right? Like, the last play on offense where they did try to go for two, Emery had a great game at quarterback, but that was one where he had a brain fart. He didn't know what to do, to let go of the ball, to pull back and throw it or run. He got lost in the biggest moment of the game. But again, if your kicker makes extra points, you're just tying it up and then probably going into overtime against the best team in the country. So there's a lot to be upset about, but I think if you're a Gator fan today, there's even more to be happy about despite the loss.
Yeah, no doubt you want to get that win, but you know they did prove that they can stay on the field with the team that everybody had already given the championship to. I mean, maybe giving some hope to college football as a whole, but no, there are teams that can play with Alabama. And is this a sign that the recruiting at Florida, the talent at Florida, is now approaching at least a Georgia level, if not an Alabama level?
It feels like it, and I mean, I think the biggest storyline was Anthony Richardson, the other quarterback that many do believe outside of Dan Mullen himself is the better guy, should be starting. He was injured to the point, allegedly, where he couldn't play in that game, but Gator fans are clamoring to see both these guys get a shot at Bama or at Georgia, which they will, at Jacksonville, and see if all that talent can be put together. But they know that at least they're closer than they've been in a long time because of that result on Saturday.
Yeah, Tennessee next. Letdown or no, the Gators keep it rolling?
Well, I think they're going to win. 20-point favorite, give or take. I don't know if I'd lay the wood on that bet, but I feel good about the Gators getting it done over the Vols, who are still trying to figure out what to do with that program.
Zach Blobner in Tampa, we appreciate it, man. Have yourself a great week, my friend.
You too. Cheers.
Alex Barth, 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston, Mass. is next. Alex, how are you, sir?
Good. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. Pat's back at it, right? Like, we all got 1 year to enjoy kicking a little dirt towards the Patriots' way. How far back are they now that they, you know, are at least a salty bunch? I know they lost the first one by, what, a point? Handled business against the Jets. Do we think that this team is a playoff team now?
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of a scrappy upstart team now. They're winning games defensively. They're winning games running the ball. It feels like the passing game's going to come along. They've had some opportunities that maybe they didn't fully capitalize on, you know, in terms of missing open receivers or poor blocking. But they're getting there. They're certainly not all the way back yet. But, it, you know, two games in, clearly an improved product from last season.
Mac Jones a rock star in Boston yet?
Oh, yeah. Oh, the people love them to Mac Jones. They can't get enough of him, and he's playing well so far. I think it's hard to argue that, you know, he's not the best of the rookie quarterbacks this year, and that's enough right now. You know, he's ultimately, once he gets far enough into it, the Brady comparisons and the, well, Tom would have done this, and Brady would have done that, you know, it's all going to come. But right now, I think people are just enjoying the newness of it all and in the promise. And, you know, say what you will about Cam Newton last year, maybe his struggles were a little overblown, but he was a 31-year-old on a 1-year contract. There was no, you know, element of a future there, right? He was a 1-2-year stopgap at most. Now there's an element of, hey, they can get back on track long term, and I think that's what really has people excited.
Yeah, does it you know, help though that there was that 1-year buffer? He's not really replacing Tom Brady. He's replacing Cam Newton.
No, I don't think that helps. I know I've had caught myself a couple times saying, you know, Mac is replacing Tom, or, well, de facto. If anything, the buffer may have made it worse, because now he, you know, not only does he have to replace Tom, he has to dig them out of their worst season in 20 years.
How good is this defense?
The defense is really good. They're really good, and that's without Stephon Gilmore. And we'll see what happens when they get him back, because if they do have a weakness right now, I think it's lack of depth in the secondary. But you know, the pass rush is getting home. They have struggled against the run, but it almost feels like it's by design, where they'll let teams beat them on the ground, but they're just not going to give up big plays that then don't break defenses back. But, you know, Bill Belichick, when he looks at a defense, he's looking at points allowed, not yards allowed. And they've been great in the red zone. They've been forcing turnovers when they need to and when they don't need to against the Jets. So the defense is going to carry this team. You know, Mac Jones is a fun story, and they add the tight ends. And in terms of the 3 to 4 year window, those guys are very important. But in terms of the 2021 Patriots, they're going to go as far as the defense takes them.
You mentioned Stephen Gilmore. There are reports that he's on the trading block. Do you buy that?
Not really. I think that if somebody came in and blew the Patriots away, they'd certainly make the move. But he's reportedly been on the trading block for about 2 years now, yeah. And nothing's happened. So I think that's kind of, you know, if a team wants to get stupid and flip a first-round pick, it would be hard for the Patriots to say no, given the fact that Gilmore is 30 years old and on an expiring contract. But I don't think they're necessarily looking to give him away.
Boston Red Sox second in the AL East, but 6.5 back from Tampa. Good news is they're at the top of the wild card heap and got a little bit of a cushion. How confident are you that the Red Sox will be one of the wild cards?
I feel good about it just because their schedule down the stretch here is pretty weak. They got the Mets coming into town starting tomorrow. The Mets might be the coldest team in baseball. And then you have the Baltimore Orioles for three. That's the worst team in baseball. They closed the season against the Nationals, who aren't great. You do have three against the Yankees there in the middle, and that's a big series. That is, you know, they can lock up the wild card, lock up home field advantage in the wild card there. But, you know, outside of that three-game series, if they can just take care of business, they should be okay.
All right, and then overall, Boston College is going to be taking on the Missouri Tigers. Mizzou, a 2.5-point favorite. Just in general, how good is Boston College this year?
They were really good. I really liked this team. And then they lose Phil Dracovic, who I thought was going to ascend to be a first-round pick this year, their quarterback transfer from Notre Dame. And, you know, I'll be honest, I don't know a ton about this guy who's coming in to replace him. But Dracovic was the engine that made the whole thing go. So without him, they feel like a typical Boston College team.
Yeah, okay. All right. We'll see if the Missouri Tigers can handle him. Alex Barth in Boston. Great stuff, man. We appreciate the time. Have yourself a great week.
You too. Thanks for having me.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. How many times has a player had 200 yards passing, 100 yards rushing, and 2 rushing touchdowns in the same game? Which
give it to me again. Give it to me again.
200 yards passing.
100 rushing.
100 yards rushing, 2 rushing touchdowns. All time. We know it's happened at least once.
All time, how many times? Mm-hmm. 200, 100.
And 2.
2 on the ground. Well, the 200 and the 2 on the ground could sneak it up, but it's the 100. Let's say like Mike Vick did it once and Cam Newton did it once. I want to say 2 other times.
It has happened once.
Last night, first time ever? Wow.
There had been 12 players prior to last night that had 200, 100, and 1 rushing touchdown. But no one had had 2 before Lamar.
I think I saw that. Didn't Cam Newton do it a whole bunch of times? And
Cam Newton has 3. That last night was Lamar Jackson.
3. That's a whole bunch,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
isn't that officially?
Well, if you just do the 200, 100, there have been 24 players. Lamar Jackson now has the most all-time at 4. Cam Newton had 3. I think Russell Wilson also has 3. The very first player to do it, Tobin Rote of the Packers in the early 50s. He did it twice. Then no one did it until Randall Cunningham in 1990, 200 passing, 100 rushing, regardless of touchdowns.
Do you remember Tui Asisopo, the quarterback?
Mm-hmm.
I think he was
Marcus
Tui Asisopo. He was the son of
Manu.
Manu? Tui Asisopo was a running back for the Pats, excuse me, when I remember it.
Early 80s.
He had a day at Washington where he threw for 300, ran for 200.
Wow.
I don't know how many touchdowns were involved, but I just remember he was 300, 200.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson, that game. And by the way, we'll take your phone calls, 913-3-810-810. Got a couple of folks on the board. Got a couple of lines still open at 913-3-810-810. Talking some Chiefs football. But listen, KU, K-State, Missouri, always a topic here in the program. Sporting didn't play, but they're always a topic. Royals, always a topic in the program. 913-3-810-810. Chiefs, I know, are going to steal the limelight, suck up all the oxygen in the room, as they deserve to do. Especially after a devastating, but a tough loss.
Yeah.
Right? Devastating makes you think that like the team's going to go in the tank.
It as a fan, it feels that way for at least, but the first hour after the game, you're just so fresh and angry about it. And then the next morning, you're like, okay, other stuff going on.
Yeah. It's like, you know, life will go, well, and you're like, hey, the Chargers are coming to town, so let's get a thumb on the Chargers. But Lamar Jackson, I mean, I think that will get him a contract in Baltimore. I personally wouldn't, but I think that'll get him a contract in Baltimore. He had to prove that he could beat Patrick Mahomes, and now he has.
And he did it, I mean, at least in a large part, through passing the ball. Now, there were some, it wasn't traditional, it wasn't like Patrick Mahomes or just traditional drop-back passing, but I wondered if they would just say, hey, Chiefs, or if the Chiefs had said, Ravens, you can run all day if you want. We're not letting you beat us in the air, if they could have done better. But it seemed like they weren't really committed to really stopping either. They got two picks early.
I agree with you. I mean,
but the running only matters if they make big plays in the passing game, and they made some key completions down the stretch in that second half.
We've had this conversation. I mean, the idea that if the Chiefs don't do better against the run, they can't win the Super Bowl, and I will disagree. They should have won this game. If they don't do better against the run, they certainly can't turn the ball over twice and snap the ball over the quarterback's head and win on the road.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, that's what this game proved to me. I'm with you. What really got him was Lamar Jackson. And frankly, Lamar Jackson on the first play, before they ever had a pick six, should have hit Hollywood Brown for a touchdown. He was wide freaking open in the middle of the field, which is the easiest down-the-field throw to make.
You don't generally get that open in an NFL game.
At least from a distance standpoint. I know the guy's got to look over straight back over his shoulder. But
5 yards from his nearest pursuer.
And so I think you see the difference between Patrick Mahomes and him when it comes to guys getting open down the field. But, you know, he fought. He hung tough. The Ravens hung tough. And that's what you expect out of that team. And it turns out the spread that we thought, like, why isn't this higher? This is why.
Yeah. And, I mean, I it was a small sample size, but I had noticed that over the previous two seasons, actually three seasons, the Ravens had been underdogs at home twice. Both times it was around 2 to 3 points, and both times they won by 17. Now, one of those was against Duck Hodges and the Steelers. The other was against Tom Brady and the Patriots. So I thought, well, that doesn't really help. One, it's a small sample size, and neither one of those guys at that point is who Patrick Mahomes is tonight or this year. But it turned out they did show up. And that crowd is a different thing. They played there last year in front of an empty building. Fans do make it different, and they were ready to go last night in Baltimore.
Yeah, and you know, at the end of the day, the Chiefs still could have won the game.
Yeah, but at 35-24, they were 49 yards away from a touchdown that you would have to have thought would have ended the game. Very late in the third quarter, and it didn't happen.
913-3810-810, the phone number, 913-3810-810. Let's go back to the phones. Let's talk to Clinton. You're in the program, Clinton. What's going on, buddy?
Well, firstly, I just want to say, any Chiefs fans that think the roof is falling in, let's we forget that we couldn't even win a playoff game about that long ago. It's kind of a joke to me. We're better than that. And it's difficult to maintain a winner, which leads me to my question is, how would you assess the Patriots did it? Was it they were just great at drafting? They're great at trading, you know, draft picks. They take mediocre players and scheme them well, just taking the quote-unquote problem players. Like, how can we replicate what they did and have a competitive team, you know, 10, 15 years like they did?
Well, I mean, I think the one big difference is they didn't go stars and Jags, right? Like, the Chiefs have kept everybody, and everybody's celebrated that, and they think that's great because they know the names, and it's fantastic. But then you bitch, you hear all this bitching about, well, Dan Sorensen's playing, and you know, the linebacker from Iowa,
Ben Neiman,
said his name 10 times, Ben Neiman, today. Everyone's complaining about, well, that's what you get when you give $20 million to like 5 different guys. Right? Like, that's who's going to fill it out. And so you don't get to sit like and to me, the problem isn't Ben Neiman, and the problem isn't Daniel Sorensen. The problem is Frank Clark and his $100 million contract and first and second round pick not really doing much. You know, it's the fact that Chris Jones is having to move out the defensive end. You know, Chris Jones can flat out go at D tackle, but at D end, I mean, I'm looking right now, Pro Football Focus is ranking him at defensive end. Now, 33rd of 99 qualified defensive ends. 33rd.
Yeah, see, I'm worried that with all these big contracts, you know, if we're going to get Brown potentially, it's like, are we going to have to choose between Tyrann Mathieu and Tyreek Hill? And who would you choose? You know, like, you know, do you think if the Pacers were willing to cut, kind of just cut the ties with the players and move on and just draft well?
It's going to be interesting, and thank you for the call, Clint, because it's a good question. I think a Tyrann Mathieu extension is coming sooner rather than later, whether that's at the end of the year or I'm still thinking it could come. When I see only $2.6 million worth of cap room and you have injuries and you have to go sign guys, like that comes off your cap. And so, they're going to have to make some kind of maneuvering, whether it's getting a deal done with Mathieu at some point during this year to clear up some cap space, or it's renegotiating with somebody. Because 2.6 is really cutting it close to trying to get to the finish line. It certainly means you're not going to be in the market at the trade deadline for anybody, right? So I still feel like something's coming there. Yeah, at some point you do have to make a choice. Now, listen, if you want to play with nine guys who get paid and everybody else at the league minimum, that can be done. They're not quite at that point, but they're down that road. You know, that is the Stars and Jags. And I think the bigger, to me, story is a lot of second and third round picks that are not delivering production for this franchise right now. There's still time for it to happen. Willie Gay Jr. is hurt. Nick Bolton is just two games into his career. Derek Nnadi is banged up. Colin Saunders is at least getting some snaps. He's a third round pick. Creed Humphrey is playing, and when he's not snapping it over the quarterback's head, for the most part playing well, although he had a couple of missed blocks at key times late in the game, but he is one of the higher graded guys on this team. Creed Humphrey, 14th of 33 graded centers. Give you an idea, amongst the offensive line, Creed Humphrey, 14 of 33. Joe Tooney, 35 of 68 guards. Trey Smith, 27th of 68 guards. He really moved up off this week's performance. Orlando Brown moved up as well, 45th of 74 tackles. And Lucas Yang, 24th of 74 tackles. The offensive line had a much better day this time around than last time. You know, at some point, yeah, you know, they're going to have to get more from those players. They still can, but right now my frustration is, why is Juan Thornhill not on the field? You know, I mean, it's a bad pick right now. And if you can't find the guys that Steve Spagnuolo wants on the field, then stop drafting defensive guys high.
Yeah, that's the key. It isn't just, well, he's not this. There's a breakdown somewhere between the GM and the guy who's in charge.
And the defensive coaching staff.
Yes, and putting them on the field. Either he isn't drafting the right guys or
Sam Madison can't get it out of Juan Thornhill, so yeah. Steve Spagnuolo can't play him. You know,
but that's not how it's designed to be. Guys who are second-round picks have more than 11 snaps in the second game of their third NFL season.
You know, look, there is a lot of reason to believe that with some more season and Chris Jones is going to get better as a defensive end. He seemed to have little inclination to set the edge in this game, and it's probably the most important team to set the edge against. So bad luck, bad timing that he gets it. I will say this, like, and I'm all for talking about how you get better, because believe me, the coaching staff and the front office are doing the exact same thing. So it's a fun exercise as a fan. We're football fans, we're Chiefs fans, we're invested in the team, let's talk about it. But big picture, I do want to point out, a ball got knocked out and went right up in the air to a receiver of the Ravens who then fell into the end zone for a touchdown. Okay? The Chiefs quarterback who hadn't thrown an interception in the month of September in his entire career threw one of the worst interceptions, I think the worst interception of his career. That's not going to happen every week. Okay? Clyde Edwards-Helaire has not fumbled yet as a pro. He fumbled at the most quintessential part of the game. All those things had to happen for the Ravens to beat the Chiefs. In reality, they were setting up for the celebration of Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes and how you just can't beat this team, even a tremendous franchise like the Ravens. That was the story that they were telling last night on Sunday Night Football. We're prepared to tell in their postgame. We're prepared to tell on SportsCenter if you clicked over there. That was going to be the story, if not for yet another mistake. And the fumble over Patrick Mahomes' head, or the botched snap over his head, you know, that crippled them as well on one drive. So through all of this, through all of the frustrations and all the things that they can do better, they still probably should have won the game. Now, I'll tell you what I don't have time for. Patrick Mahomes needs to be running the ball more. No. Wrong. Erroneous.
16 for 107 is not how you want to utilize him.
We'll get back to the phones when we come back. 913-3810-810. You're in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
He prefers the company of men.
Who doesn't?
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHV.
Talking Chiefs football here on, unfortunately, a losing Monday. Brighter days are ahead. Big challenge coming up for the Chiefs with the Chargers, although the Chargers falling as well to 1-1 teams. Didn't we all know the Raiders and Broncos would be the only two undefeated teams in the AFC right now?
As was forecasted by the prophet.
913-3810-810. Let's talk to Rob. You're in the program, Rob. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Great show you guys have there.
Thank you,
sir.
Hey,
just looking at it from a schematic standpoint, there's just a couple things that stick out to me, and it's just a kind of a couple common trends that I've noticed, really not necessarily in these first two games, but kind of the middle half to kind of end of last year. And one thing I'm looking at is what's happening up front. And I'm talking about the offensive line and the defensive line. I'll start with the defensive line. As far as schematics, you know, putting Chris Jones on the edge, I understand that, you know, people get hurt, salary cap, this and that. You got to move people around. Understand that, first and foremost, you know. But after watching the game against the Ravens and the Browns, I've noticed that the inside presence, the knockback football, as I would like to call it, is not being shown. They're not recreating the line of scrimmage. They're not, you know, playing with their body. They're not playing with their eyes. And, you know, I don't think they're playing too much with their hands. And I think that's some, you know, coach in college used to tell us, you know, you play, there's three ways to play a gap. My eyes, my body, and his ass. And I think that the Chiefs are just getting blown up in their gaps. And I think that's just what stands out to me on the defensive line is just not creating that presence, having that edge protection. And I think that's killing them. And I understand that, like, with Chris Jones, you know, having to put him on the edge and everything is tough. You know, you're taking an all-pro defensive lineman, asking him to, you know, fill a role, play a defensive end. I understand that. And then as far as the offensive side, and I know it's been discussed before, but what's your guys' thoughts on the kind of the conservative play calling towards the end of the games? I know it's been talked about before, and I know it's kind of a sore subject, but, I mean, what's your guys' thoughts on those two topics?
Well, let me first say the last thing on any list to talk about in last night's game is Andy Reid's play calling. But I'm happy to talk about it. But so many other things went wrong before you ever get down to, you know, Andy Reid trying to be clairvoyant and know that a guy that's never fumbled in the NFL is going to fumble. So start playing, you know, start scrambling with your quarterback running out the side. It is, and we're going to play it coming up next hour, the question I asked Andy Reid about. You know, back in the day, it used to be just get down the field and score, and you're a hero. You know, when games used to end up 17-13, if you could get down the field and score in a two-minute drill, you were a genius. Now you're not only supposed to go down and score, you're supposed to go down and score and leave no time on the clock because every offense is absolutely pretty good. And so that's what the guy was trying to do. And unfortunately, okay, Clyde Edwards-Helaire fumbled the football. You know, I do think what has to happen. I think his strategy was fine. I think his play calls were great. He roared down the field to the point to where, okay, we're in field goal range. Now let's start draining the clock. We're going to try to get seven, but we know we're in field goal range, so we can at least get the three. I think Andy Reid played it perfectly. And
absolutely
predicting that Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to fumble, anyone who thinks that that's you should have called something else because you should know your running back who never fumbles is going to fumble is asinine. At best, absolutely Asinine. That being said, I think he does have to embrace, Rob, and I'm going to let you go because we're running short on time. He does, I think, have to embrace very soon, if this defense doesn't come around, the identity of his team, which is one that can't stop anyone. And so when formulating what you're going to do at the end of the game, you've got to be aggressive in putting as many points on the board, and you cannot let up on a score-first mentality. And I think they did want to start kind of stalling things out and protect his defense. And he ran the ball against Cleveland, and they did it more effectively and were able to convert third and fours regularly and keep the ball and go ahead and ice the game out against the Cleveland Browns. But in this one, they weren't. But I think you've got to get to a point to where you've scored so many points that there aren't enough possessions left for your opponent that if they score a touchdown every single time, they still can't get to your point total. I know that's not something coaches want to do, acknowledging absolute failure on the other side of the ball, But until proven otherwise, that's how this game should be managed.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Show. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, Jamar Chase, the second player since the merger to have a 40-yard touchdown catch in each of his first two games. Who was the first? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.